your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good AM. Today is Tuesday, March 18th. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for the day as we are talking again, as we continue our series with the Director of Antiquities Monument Museum Corporation, Mr. Don Cornish, and where he's just updating us with all of the activities, all of the excitement that is happening at AMMC, right? Just recently, Mr. Cornish made a big announcement on our show last week. And from there, he was on the ground as he was meeting with people in the community, with stakeholders. He had a big press conference the other day. I even have some responses from that press conference, but I want him to update us. Last time he was here, Mr. Cornish talked about what is the plan for the water tower, what is the plan for the Fort Finn Castle area, which includes the 66 steps. And he made some announcement. I'm going to let him do that again, just for the listening audience to be acquainted to what he said last week, so we can start our conversation. Our conversation is going to be centered on, like I said, some activities that the AMMC is doing. So we're going to be branching towards the Family Island next, as we and also various Nassau areas. Tend to conclude his announcements on what happened last week, because I think starting Monday, some big things started happening. I allow him to do that. Again, thank you very much, Don Cornish, for Director of Antiquities, Monuments, Museums Corporation. I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sia, and it's great to be back. Since we last spoke, we did speak with the public about the closure of Fort Finn Castle's operations. And that is that extends also to the Queen's Staircase in terms of our business being operated there. As you know, there were 42 vendors there, and they actually come under the Straw Market Authority, who is our tenant. And we were able, they have an association, and we met with them, and we were successful in getting the relocation organized for Fort Charlotte on a temporary basis while the construction the reconstruction of the water tower is undertaken. That was not, and it is not, and it wasn't expected to be an easy process, but they started operations yesterday at Fort Charlotte in a temporary accommodation, the tents that have been provided. And I just came out of another meeting. There'll be many more, I'm sure, in the management team to talk about what has happened so far, logistical information, the management plan, standard operational procedures, the security plan, also in terms of our marketing to our stakeholders, what they're able to do on property, lighting, security, all the details of how their relocation is going to be able to be managed going forward.
So give us a rundown for people who exercise, who live in that immediate area, what they can anticipate in that Fort Finn Castle area, and immediately the Queen Staircase. That's the place you to explain to them, because a number of persons are concerned.
Yeah, the Queen Staircase, obviously, for the purposes of the construction, we are asking persons to approach with caution. We're not stopping the public from using it. We're trying to discourage them from using it as much as possible. It will remain, quote-unquote, open. There will be signage there to caution them of the danger. We're trying to discourage all of our guests from visiting at all, so we're trying to ensure that they do not return to the site during the construction period, because there may very likely be repelling concrete falling, because, of course, the work on the outside of the tower includes addressing the issues, concrete that basically needs to be repaired. And that process, you can imagine, with concrete falling from over 100 feet overhead, it could very well end up anywhere. So it's a danger zone. For insurance purposes, the contractor had to set up a gate, a fence, basically to prevent the site from being exposed. But it doesn't mean that everything within the perimeter of that area is a safe zone. Up to 150 feet outside of that could very likely expose persons to some dangers. And so the team is on the ground again this morning, looking at some of the issues we're going to have, trying to address some of the points to ensure that when persons do enter the space, that they're able to be cautioned appropriately. So hopefully the signage will do some of that. Our conversations with yourself and others in the public will help. But we want to discourage persons from getting too close to the construction zone. It means that if they decide to use the staircase during the construction period, they could very well be in danger. And so given that reality, we're not preventing persons, but we want to caution them if they're going to utilize that site. Bear in mind that overhead, there may very likely be falling objects, and that's not a safe place to be.
So is the entrance to the Fort Finn Castle cordoned off?
Fort Finn Castle itself is cordoned off.
And like, where does that fence start? Because I'm picturing that.
The fence starts just as you get to the brow of the hill. Mm-hmm. You'll see the gate and all the space beyond that. So there's an easement in between the old Johnson residence, as operated now as a restaurant, all the way to the top of the hill. So all of Manning Street, well, that's Sands Road, Manning Street, the entire area actually. And we may have to extend that fence to the western side of the fort as well, because the fence actually didn't cover the entire perimeter. We also have the walk-up from Princess Margaret's side also blocked to prevent persons from walking into the northern side of the Finn Castle area. But obviously, we can only fence it to a certain extent because of the fact the property is on a hill. And so persons actually discouraging them from coming up there out of curiosity or anything such thing, because it's a danger area, it's a construction site.
The last time we hear a resident from Finn Castle called. I actually have a voice clip from you. Kermit, can you cue that up for me? And as soon as you're ready, just play that for me. Who raised concern? I heard it and I said, oh, let me get this clip and I'll play it for you. Because I say, you should respond. You're the director. You need to respond to these things. And he raised some concerns. And I'm going to allow, play it and allow you to respond. So go ahead when you're ready, Kermit.
Fort Finn Castle. You see how crappy they are? And you're on this radio talking crap, talking foolishness and nonsense. But you see, they want to do things their own way. We who live there have no input. Ask him if he could do that in Lightfoot Key. Ask him to do that in Old Fort Bay. Ask him to do that in Blair. This is the way these persons run things. And I'm talking about his superiors now, the cabinet, the government of the Bahamas, because he's just a mouthpiece. That's all he is. He ain't weighed nothing. We're talking foolishness and nonsense. The citizens and the residents of Fort Finn Castle have never been consulted on anything. So I don't care what kind of renovations they say they're doing there.
That mouthpiece, you mean you, Mr. Cornish? He said you ain't consult them in Fort Finn Castle, and they don't care what type of renovations you, Mr. Cornish, the mouthpiece for the government. He mean you, Mr. Cornish. He's concerned. He's saying, man, you got to do better. How do you respond to that, man?
Well, you know, there's also continuity in decision-making in organizations. Mature organizations like ours that was created in 1998, we know that there's continuity that has to be looked at from the point of view of best practices and also benchmarking for the future. We talk about those things. But when we begin to have conversations, we take them in the context of exactly what our mandate is. The late Courtney Strawn, who was chair of the corporation, hosted a meeting in 2012 at the site for all stakeholders. At that time, there were discussions about what needed to happen to make the site better. If you recall, that is the same year that they constructed the present vending areas. If you look at those buildings, they have not been repaired or maintained sufficiently, and they're a blight on the landscape. And there's a serious issue of gentrification in general in that area. But I gave you just now a study that was done as a part of our national signage campaign to really improve the way we communicate with our guests and with the public about historic sites in the country. Mm-hmm. The first section of this actually shows you the forts and it shows you the Queen's Staircase. This was 2022, and it was done by my predecessor, assisted by Ms. Kim Alton Stubbs, who's been at the corporation for quite some time as a technical consultant now, having served several roles. And you'll note that at the very beginning, it shows you Fort Fincastle, it shows you the water tower, and it shows you the Queen's Staircase. This document is very comprehensive because what was intended, and this conversation was really a continuation of the conversations that have been had over a significant period of time. On page number 2, it shows Fort Fincastle as a heritage site. It talks about the water tower of it and says, you know, the information about how it was constructed. And the construction actually began under Lord Dunmore back in the 1780s. And then, of course, the Queen's Staircase, which came in the 1840s, and the water tower, which was completed in 1928. It is the most visited site in the Caribbean for guests who come by cruise ship. And just beyond that, if you look, this is an area that
I see. All I was going to ask some questions about that.
And so this actually overlooks the Queen's Staircase, so it joins us. And this is the community that he's talking about. And you see buildings that are in the Fincastle and Mason's Addition neighborhoods. And this signage program, which at the time when this was prepared, I was working in another capacity, writing for grants in support of the corporation. Before I assumed the position I now have. And you'll see a number of initiatives that were laid out in this document to improve the entire area. If you go to page 6, it shows you Mortimer's Candy Kitchen. And if you go on and you look through it, you'll see that this was a part of a heritage trail, a pilot program that was going to be started between Fort Fincastle, page 8, Fort Fincastle, Mason's Addition, as a part of the overall New Providence Heritage Trail. On page 8, on the bottom, there's the homestead of Sir Randall Fox. So we have no illusions about what's there. We fully and completely get it. We understand exactly what it is we're talking about. The research has been done. We've had those conversations already with the community, and we are now a plan that has actually been well considered and at this stage is being funded to the benefit of the community that he's talking about.
And I want to inquire here. In the Fort Fincastle, Mason Addition, McCullough Corner area, there are a series of 4 steps leads from up the hill down to the community. But these steps are in disrepair.
They are mentioned in this report.
But I want to know is who's responsible for the steps? Is that coming to AMMC? How do you plan to use those steps? Or do you have any plans to use those steps in your concept?
If you look at this very same plan, you will see they are mentioned for improvement. We have taken the initiative. It says right here, stairway between Fort Fincastle and Mason's Addition, one of the 4 stairs that will be restored is the one that goes right near to where the Queen's Staircase is, where the water tower is actually taking place. This was all intended to be a systematic improvement program. Obviously, these things require funding. Mm-hmm. The funding has been addressed because we have been requesting support from stakeholders, and I won't mention them here, but those documents have been presented, and we are well advanced in conversations about making that happen with the partnerships that we have. In our mind about what we are doing. If you look through, I'll leave it with you so you can have a chance to review it, and then you can make up your mind about whether or not there's any credibility to what we are saying. But at the end of the day, these things are not being done by people who don't understand. I grew up very near to the fort, you know, and I shared with you a little bit about myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't fall out of the sky yesterday. I've made my contribution. You know, I grew up in Taylor Street, right next to Shadrach Morris's headquarters, and I lived in these areas. I grew up walking these areas, climbing Collins Wall. I was a member of the Boys Brigade, non-commissioned officer, actually, under Simpson Penn, whose house is on Burial Ground Corner. You know, and so when you start to talk about the contribution that we don't know anything and other charges that are being made, ultimately, I'm a stakeholder as well. And I was the director of product development for the Ministry of Tourism. I was a director. I was in charge of product for the Ministry of Tourism in 2012, 2013. Many of the initiatives have been done. I've worked on the front lines for tourism in Canada, in the United States. I've lived there. I spent 6 years abroad on the front lines. So I understand the tourism product entirely. I've worked in the Family Islands in charge of a tourist office. I've worked in several departments of the government over a 32-year career. And so, you know, beyond that, I've also worked in the community in sports. I was president of the Bahamas Volleyball Federation for 15 years, and most of the athletes who came through and got scholarship patients of life, I helped to develop.
So you're saying you vested?
Yeah, I put skin in the game. I was vice president of the Bahamas Olympic Association. Mm-hmm. I was co-chair of the National Sports Advisory Council for Family Islands. I've been a Rotarian. I've been there. I understand these communities. I chaired a task force of stakeholders from both the private and private sector and from government. And we talked about everything. I mean, we talked about Delancey Town, the Charleston Committee. I worked with them. You know, we've been doing work consistently to improve our product. This is not something new. So the fact that I'm now in a different role doesn't negate the fact that I may not fully appreciate and understand the concerns of the community. We have a product in the Bahamas that needs improvement, and we've systematically been addressing that. Now, whether or not persons feel they should be at the table is another issue. But our offices are at Collins and Shirley Street, and they're welcome to come in anytime. The Cabinet of the Bahamas has been trying very hard consistently over the years to fund those areas of the Bahamas that need attention. Very recently, they appointed a committee, a national committee. I'll share the members of that committee with you. I didn't bring the document with me. From various stations of life, persons who, and I talked about this briefly in discussion with you, those persons were in a session with me 2 Saturdays ago. We started the conversation. We would meet every month for the next year talking about improving what we offer in our historical spaces.
But let's talk about that. I accept everything you say, but let's talk about that. And you even mentioned the board, and hopefully when we continue the series, you give me their names and who on this board and how what they are doing to move that. But I want to talk about projects that you are spearheading. Apparently, so I'm told, Grand Bahama have sites that AMMC is in charge of.
Well, Grand Bahama, but all the Bahamas is my responsibility.
Yeah, I won't go island by island. So,
but Grand Bahama in particular, we're completing a museum in downtown Freeport. And that museum basically will be the location for a presentation of our history as an island for Grand Bahama and for the Northern Bahamas, with emphasis really on what happened over the history of Grand Bahama.
Explain that, because what happened in Grand Bahama? I actually reacts to the question. You say something happened in Grand Bahama. What happened in Grand Bahama worth having a museum?
Well, that's debatable from that perspective, but you know, every island has history. Mm-hmm. Communities, industry, and really the life who helped to build what is now known as Grand Bahama, whether it was Pine Ridge or whether it was the Jacktie experience of persons in the tourism industry, whether it was the industrial sector, whether it was the Hawkesbury Creek Agreement of 1955 that led to Freeport, whether it's just simply what has been represented in their lives since the island basically became, in our estimation, one of the most significant islands in the Bahamas. And so you're looking at every civilization that we can represent over that time in our history. In our modern history, obviously, post-independence, what has happened, pre-independence, sorry, and post-independence, how we represent that best in the images, in the videos, in the conversations, because oral history is also important, and all the artifacts that are left, the historic sites that exist. I mean, most Bahamians don't know about Golden Grove. Golden Grove doesn't exist anymore in letter, but in spirit. Golden Grove was the first capital of Grand Bahama. And, you know, most people think about Grand Bahama, they know Freeport, obviously. They think West End is the capital or what's the first capital, et cetera. They don't know about Heparin Town and the fact that administratively that was the capital as well, following the closure of Golden Grove, which was in East Grand Bahama. So there's a lot of things that people don't know and don't understand about the way that these islands were developed over many, many years. So Grand Bahama will be the first And then there will be other museums that will
be one, one at a time. Grand Bahama have any artifacts? Because I know NASA of all kind of artifacts.
Yeah, the artifacts.
The artifacts.
Hurricanes. Mm-hmm. But we do have artifacts. We do have archival documents. We do have archival photographs. And there are a number of representations of our history that we have in tangible form that we are going to provide.
Okay. And where is this museum going to be, and any kind of timeline for its opening?
Well, the museum is actually downtown, just behind the old parking shop, right across from the Port Authority. And the structure will be completed in a matter of about a week or two. But the actual museum itself won't open. It'll be operating basically as our location for the museum until all the work, the curatorial work is completed. And we anticipate a November opening, given the amount of work that needs to be done with exhibits and the like. So it's going to be officially open sometime in November.
Okay. I went to Long Island, and I was blown away by one small clapboard museum that had all kind of stuff in it. It goes in, they had AWAC stuff. Not no fake AWAC stuff, though. They have authentic AWAC stuff in this museum in Long Island. Nobody told me about that.
That is our museum.
But how come no one told me that there's a museum in Long Island with AWAC stuff?
Well, the National Museum has a physical location in Family Arts, and that is the one that you rightly pointed out in Long Island. And that museum is manned by our staff on a daily basis. And it is one of several representations we intend to have around the Bahamas to really be a repository for those things that you talked about, so people can know and understand who we are as a people. So we have a limited staff there, but it is a glimpse of where we've come as a people in that space. Even though it's small, museums don't have to be large structures. They simply have to be properly represented. And so that is one of the things that we've done there, and we intend to continue to do to ensure that we do our best to represent the history that we have and share. You know, part of the challenge we have in the Caribbean is the perception that we don't have any culture, and we don't have the rich history of some of this. The heritage is not as clear, it's not as visible. So this is an attempt to ensure that as a part of the National Museum network, every single island has an opportunity to represent itself.
Okay. Which other island can we speak about that has excitement, things, big announcements happening? Because I'm familiar with Long Island. I've seen and touched some of the artifacts there. I've seen they give a history of Long Island. Right? But does Exuma have anything similar that ran by the AMMC?
No, we also have partnerships. One of the things that is happening is that the number of stakeholders in Exuma that we've been working with in Steventon, the old Steventon jailhouse. And you know the story of Pompeii. Comes out of Exuma. And of course, Pompeii Museum represents the struggle of that period when Pompeii rebelled Esau to make a case against the conditions that they were suffering in Exuma at that time. And so that partnership is evolving as I speak. There are some challenges there, but they have an active committee that we've been working with, along with the Ministry of Tourism, to ensure that at some point we'll be able to move into a framework where we have an operational space, not necessarily a museum, but as a part of the museum, these historic sites can be presented in a way that persons can go and they can get a good picture of what Exuma was and how it has evolved over that time. The same thing is happening elsewhere. There are some private museums in Abaco as well that we have.
The Hopetown Museum.
Yeah, well, the Wynne Malone.
The Wynne Malone.
Yeah, which is in Hopetown. Of course, the lighthouse, the Circle Lighthouse across the way, as well as the Albert Lowe Museum in Greentoke Key. Of course, you know, Dorian did severe damage to those facilities. We're talking about ways in which we can strengthen our partnership to assist those private museums in getting back on track and providing the level of exposure of our history that they've done in the past. And we have also eyes on Eleuthera, and that's a more immediate one because we have some structures, some buildings in Rock Sound, as well as we have government buildings throughout the island that we've been looking at Cupid Key, for example, at the Haynes Library in Governor's Harbor, at Harbor Island. Of course, you have Preacher's Cave and many other locations. The old jailhouse there, which was being developed as a museum prior to my arrival. Of course, the landing of Columbus at Cat Island, Mother Alvernia, working with the Catholic Diocese on ways in which we can present that, as well as some historic sites, some of the old plantations in Cat Island, as well as in Inagua and in Acklands and other places where there are lighthouses that also need to be featured and presented in a way that protects our heritage and promotes it for the benefit of future Bahamians.
In your name, you have monuments and museums. Few Bahamians are familiar with the number of monuments around town, but I'm not sure if all of the monuments here is under AMMC. Name me some of the monuments that you know offhand, right? Because I know you, I didn't have you prepared for this, right? That the AMMC is responsible for maintaining, creating, stick to Nassau for now, and we go to Family Islands. The monuments that we may not be familiar with, and like Columbus gone, and nobody. I keep on asking where Columbus. Nobody seems to know where Columbus. And last week you told me that Columbus belongs to Government House, the Governor General, so they have it. But monuments like that, monuments like, how does the AMMC impact Woods Rogers, or that's private property?
You brought up a point about, I mean, that really is a point of vesting. What is vested in us? All of the monuments are not vested in us. That's something that I wouldn't have any illusions about. We do have our own properties and forts that we're responsible directly for. Some of the monuments are on private property or on property that's vested in other government agencies. Under the Act, what we do have is the ability to enforce certain standards and to also insist on certain levels of cooperation. We are now trying to ensure that all the monuments are vested in us if they are considered national monuments. There are some legalities to it. The minister has the power to assist us in ensuring that once we do make a step in the direction of securing a monument considered such by the definition, that they come under our purview. At the moment, that is an area that basically concerns us, simply because, we've not taken account of the fact that we are very young as an organization, having only been established in 1998. And so most of the public property is vested in the Treasury of the Bahamas. And so what that means in real terms is that we now have to go back and ask the government to vest them in us. And so the vesting process or the ability is something that we're actively looking at. And at the moment, that has not come to a point where we're satisfied. That's the easy way to put it.
Okay. In the other show, we talk about bunkers, but there's a number of bunkers all over New Providence, right?
Bunkers?
I think by the sports center, there's some underground thing.
Is that an urban legend?
No, man, a bunker where they go underground for when they had the, what they call the field, Windsor Field Air Base. And if you look right by, okay, hold on, that's the basketball place, whatever the Kendall Isaac basketball gymnasium. Right next to it is an underground facility. And I want to know if AMMC has any affiliation with that, or that belongs to the youth sports youth sports ministry.
When you use the term bunker,
I talk about underground and explosive and World War II stuff.
You know, the Act provides that any artifact, any building or structure more than 50 years old is considered an antiquity to be managed by us or to be brought to our attention. There are many areas of the Bahamas that we are discovering as well. I didn't realize that there were bunkers, but conversations that have taken place. I've heard many, many conversations about tunnels and conversations about these underwater, these underground, I guess you say, edifices or facilities, if you may. Some of them are urban legends. Some structures that were built may not necessarily or cannot be defined in the way that you just said as bunkers or tunnels. I heard about escape routes for the governor.
You mean there was no escape route for the government house? Under Grey Cliff?
I've heard all of those things. I was at a particular place recently doing a tour, and I was told about some of these underground caverns. I do know that There are some areas where structures were placed underground for various reasons. Some were part of well systems and drainage systems, and some were in fact utilized for whatever purposes during particular periods of our history. Our archaeologists have looked at virtually all of these, and Dr. Turner, who is the foremost expert in that area, as I indicated prior to our show, I'll bring her on so she can speak more specifically to those things. We do have persons who understand and who have done the studies, and we have the research, and we can speak to those particular things more specifically in that kind of environment when persons can share what they believe, without saying that they're wrong. But there are cases where we've been able to dispel some of those rumors. And so it'll be good for us to, if someone is identifying something they feel is of some interest to us, to really let us know. We have the professionals on our staff whose responsibility it is to ensure the right information is given, the right descriptions are given, that the history of these places is able to be presented or researched sufficiently to satisfy the correct presentation of those images to the public. Bahamians are very strong about what they believe.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna tell anybody that they're wrong about what they're saying. But we do have persons who are experts in these areas whose responsibility is to look at it, to examine it, and to identify it appropriately.
Yes, I saw I had a caller here, and the caller could call me back. There is a narrative, so let's go talking about narrative, at the 66 steps, the Queen's Staircase, right, where everybody was rowing. And I see there's an official narrative now that the board has erected at the staircase. And I always thought that the staircase was cut out by slaves, right? And that narrative says something completely different.
The narrative is correct. It was not cut out by slaves. If you look at the date that it was actually done, you will realize that, the dates for slavery are very clear. So if this Queen's Staircase was finished in 1834, it was cut out in 1834, actually, out of the stone. Pray tell me which slaves would have done that if they were free.
There you go. Let's go to this first caller. I can leave that right there because people can growl. Go ahead, caller. Garden Radio AM. Of course, we're speaking to the director of the AMMC, Mr. Dawn Cornish. I'm going to challenge him about this cut note of the 66 steps. I can let that slide for now. Wait till Ms. Turner comes and growl her. But go ahead, caller.
Yeah, good morning, Steve Newey. Good morning, Dawn Cornish.
Morning.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good.
Dawn, not to detract from what y'all are talking about, but I want to ask you about Charles Farquharson estate in Watlands Island, because I had many years' experience when I was doing the research with the gold property in Fortune Hill. Remember that went to court?
Yes, you're talking about San Salvador.
Right. Mm-hmm. Remember, I did a lot of research there when Dr. Tinker,
yes, sir,
was in charge. But what happened with the Charles Farquharson estate? Because that's my great, 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 great grandfather.
Yes.
And today, make 18 years and 8 months since the 18th of July, 2006, is built and is registered in the Registrar General Office. Mm-hmm. I have a certified copy of it, and which in the Department of Archives, they have listed as his son, James Farquharson Will. I spoke with the young lady in the research department last week, and she has confirmed what they have there, the will as James Farquharson Will. I want you to let the people know what you have in reference to Charles Farquharson in
Watlands Island. Well, as I understand it, that was under litigation for some time, and I can't speak specifically to what the conclusions were in terms of the legal rights or the ownership, but I do know that there was some interest because there appears to have been some activity on the property, some attempts to get licensing to do other activities on the property. Without getting into the specifics of it, I'm not aware of all of the details of which you speak, But I do know that any application to explore that area for whatever purposes is subject to the court. And so I can say that as far as I'm aware, that is still very much, I guess, under consideration by those who have the legal right to make that next step. We don't get involved unless there is an application, and they would have to prove that they have the legal right to enter the property for whatever purposes. Now, in terms of cataloging it for the record, I know that we have not made any particular steps in San Salvador as far as documenting estates or historical sites of late. We do have a record of, you know, the history of San Salvador, which we can look at from the perspective of the historical value for us and what we present to the public. But as far as that, the ownership issue, we don't get into the weeds of ownership of property and ownership of estates. We simply want to present them as historic places of historical significance so that people are able to know that information. And, you know, we can present that also on site through partnerships with the owners of those properties, through signage and through other directional information. So that's as much as I can say. I don't know if there's anything else you'd want to share with me about it, but I'm not familiar with anything beyond that.
Let's see, we get another telephone call, and our producer connects us to that. The previous caller mentioned Fortune Hill. I know some pirates are supposed to hide some gold to the AMMT.
Any expiration for anything of value in the Bahamas is required to go through a process of application. And at the moment, the only licenses that we have for the underwater cultural heritage, persons who are exploring ships that have gone under over the centuries. But in terms of the online operations or any artifact or anything of value found anywhere in the Bahamas, yes, they have to get approval from the corporation to explore it. And there is a formula in law on how whatever they find is divided, if you may, and what should remain with the government, as in the corporation's rights for benefit, and what the owner would get. So in terms of the I don't want to say legends or stories about gold or anything else hidden on the ground. Before they touch it, they do have to make an application to the corporation. And if they do find it, they have to have a license to remove it.
Okay. We have another telephone caller who wants to engage you. Go ahead, caller. We're speaking to Dawn Cornish. Call Gerwant. Call me back. Right? We're going through what the AMMC has vested in them. I'm not sure if you heard this urban legend about Woods Rogers being buried in New Providence. I want to know if you know about that, where that is, because they tell me on top of the East Hill Street, right near the old post office. And I want to know, how come I see no sign? So we can talk about that after we come on, just in case you heard about it. Because I people say that's where it is. And I want a sign. I want to know where Woods Rogers be, right? This is Guardian Radio AM. We're talking to the director of the AMMC, Dr. Say, give me a doctor title now. Dawn Cornish, right? And we'll be right back.
Call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing any knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Well, he fool with Joe
Sec, and you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you on?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. You gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know. And nobody gotta know it's you.
So out of the way.
All you gotta do is call them or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you're saying.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
I've been about Pinda, and I meet him in his showroom. I said, Pinda, I just come out of a showroom in Portugal, and let me tell you something, them showroom and selection ain't got nothing on yours. Man, I like this stock of porcelain, this ceramic tile you got here. What I really like is the range of sizes that come in, 8x48, 12x24, 24x24, and what I really, really like, more than the things I really like, is the price. From $275 a square, all in between, you can't beat that. Not even with a 2x4 from Enterprises.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let the masters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Everybody Wins Live is bringing you the ultimate giveaway. A brand new Cybertruck. For every $30 spent, you're in the drawing for the ultimate grand prize, a Cybertruck. Join live at the Vibes Cartel Concert March 29th. You'll also be automatically entered to win tickets to see the world boss himself. 25 lucky winners every single week. Visit everybodywinslive.com to get into the game. See website for full terms and conditions. Must be 18 or over to participate.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. I speak to Mr. Don Cornish, who is the director of the Antiquities Monuments Museum.
Corporation.
Yeah. Okay, we have a caller who's trying to get in for a while. Let me just go straight to them before I continue the conversation. Go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio AM. Okay, 1 minute if we connect you properly. Oh, you going? It didn't work out? Okay. You have a signage program that's supposed to be coming on stream soon, where you denote various historical places and burial grounds. I mentioned Woods Rogers. I didn't get to mention that the penultimate ancestor for the Deems family, right? I think that's Charles Deems, is buried in Porter's Field, right? Right by St. Matthew's Church. There, if you go to the Western Cemetery, all kind of former parliamentarians, Sir This, Sir That, from United Kingdom, from Loyalists, from the United States, is buried right inside that Western Cemetery. But there don't seem to be any signage or any narrative as to who these people were, who were in the Bahamas in the 1600s, 1700s.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, signage is a way in which we have a kind of get all the physical research done themselves. It's an organized way to share information as quickly as possible. It is a mature way for us to connect people with their history in a way that dispels some of the rumors. And, you know, Bahamians are good at rumors and they sound good, you know. And I remember someone saying to me one time that a lie will be around the world before the truth gets to put its shoes on. And so we do know that when people get the information in their head, it's hard to convince them, especially Bahamians. So we wanted to be able to bridge that, providing heritage markers and panels and directional signage throughout the network of our country, starting in New Providence, which is our hub, and throughout the Family Islands, to create heritage trails, if you may, where people actually can connect like things. They could see all the museums, they can see all the historical sites by, you know, going to one or two locations. We've talked about, it's modern times, having electronic signs that actually are like a roadmap to the entire experience. So you touch a screen and you can pick a category. And in fact, we've even gone further to talk about apps, an app that you can have on your phone, and you can actually purchase tours throughout the network by scanning a QR code.
Self-guided
tours, and also purchase tours that are guided. You mentioned Woods Rogers earlier. You mentioned a number of things. All those stories of our history over the centuries that we've, our country has
existed. So let me do a true or false.
I've heard that story to be true. We could verify locations for significant figures. Give me a list, and the next time I'm here, I will tell you where every person that you're concerned about is buried. I'm not prepared to do that today, obviously.
No, I understand.
But we do know there are a number of significant people. You mentioned it. Mm-hmm. The number of persons who've been buried in significant places. We want to talk about that by providing the signage, the verbiage, the accurate information to prevent some of the rumors, some of the, legends from taking foot in the minds of Bahamians, so they are properly informed. Directional signs to take them away from places they don't need to go, so they don't have these conversations and they become a fact in their mind.
Yeah.
You know, we want them to have the truth about their history.
Yes. I see we have a caller here, a producer, see if that's somebody there, if it can be connected. Also, I want to ask you, you have the bones of three of my ancestors holding hostage at your office. You didn't let me see them. You said, no, I can't see them, but you have my ancestors hold hostage inside glass from box there.
Oh, hallelujah.
What do you plan to do with my ancestors, the awaks that you have there? What do you plan to do with them?
One of the conversations that you and I have had, and we continue to have throughout the the National Museum discussions that we have, is about the best ways to represent, the remains of persons who were found in the Bahamas, whether they are from the pre-Columbus period or post. And, you know, we had the ceremony the other day for the return of the Lucayan remains in Rawson Square, which was a high moment in terms of connecting the dots and bringing persons back, the remains back to their rightful place. There's been, in the United States in particular, I know that the Native Americans, if you may, have been successful in petitioning the government of the United States to prevent exposure of remains in the public. And that is a discussion that is also being presented to us. And we have not gotten to the point where we can have a very articulate discussion about it, because we haven't had a space as a national museum. We're working on that at Collins. But going forward, we have to have that conversation, because your concerns are legitimate. Would you want your remains to be exposed to persons coming into the museum space, or should they be represented in a different way? Cattle an archive and just talk about it from the point of view of the civilization in which they lived, and other details about their life, their contribution, etc. We have a whole body of work in archaeology that tries to provide, the connection with our past. Of course, the burial grounds and remains that are found elsewhere throughout the country that we are responsible for securing. Right now, for example, we have a location in South Eleuthera where we've discovered the remains we believe to be of the native Lucayans.
My ancestors, yes.
Your ancestors.
I want to do a ritual right now, but go ahead.
Yeah, and it's submerged in water. So we have to send the conservators and the archaeologists. We're seeking the funding. In fact, we may have the funding already to do the research. We may have to go to the site and excavate the site to ensure that we secure the remains that are there. And so the question would then be, what do you do with them? Obviously, we secure them, we catalog them, testing is done to ensure that it's accurate information that we provide. Could be how, what do we do beyond that? So museums historically have been that place where you get to see what we discover. And so you're right, we need to have a national conversation about whether or not they should end up on a display in a museum of any kind in the Bahamas. So that conversation, I believe, will be informed by how people in the Bahamas see themselves and whether or not that's the right way that they would want remains to be presented.
I have put several texts, actually two texts, talking about Cat Island, Watless Island, and San Salvador. I'm not sure if that comes under the AMMC.
You're talking about the name change?
The name change and where Columbus first landed, right?
Was it 1926?
Yes, 1926 when they changed the name. Okay. But
by an act of parliament.
But does that come under AMMC or that's like an archives type concept?
Well, there are a lot of decisions that are made in the Bahamas relative to different things. As I understand it, the name change continues to be a concern. We have not been challenged in that internal conversation at the National Museum about whether or not that change affects the discovery story, the Columbus story. If that is, in fact, a conversation that rises to the level where there's a dispute about, in fact, the facts surrounding Columbus being discovered in the Bahamas, that's something that I think we also have to have a broader conversation about. Because it was, as far as I understand, a political decision that affected some people's birth, actually, because their birth certificate would have said something entirely different than what we presently know. And so I as much as possible, would like to have that conversation. If the facts can be presented to us, then we can broaden that conversation to talk about whether or not the change itself is germane to the representation of the discovery story that we are presently sharing in our history books.
I have one controversial text. Every so often you only have a political text, and I'll do that in our closing. I can tell you where the text goes, and you can answer it however you choose. It says, why is the National Library continue to be closed to the public, but continue to be used as a private legal office? I know you know about that,
The National Library?
Yeah, the National Library.
The library is not our responsibility directly. That would be Ministry of Education. But as an historic site, obviously, it would be a part of our conversation about historic buildings. But I can't speak to why a decision would have been made in that direction. Our job is to protect, preserve, and to promote our culture. And all the built heritage, and never come under the built heritage, buildings in particular, we would wish that they would be preserved as best possible or restored if they, in fact, fall into disrepair. And so we advocate and we try to maintain our position that we wish to have every building that has historic value protected.
Yes. We will continue our series talking to Dawn Cornish, Director of Antiquities Monuments Museum Corporation. He's supposed to be inviting some of his colleagues with him for the next conversation as we talk about graveyards, right? As we talk about cemeteries,
tunnels,
the myth of that. Also, some haunted places and stuff like that. I think we have Miss Turner.
Dr. Turner
is supposed to be passing by and giving some details on that. So we'll arrange that show, and then we'll challenge Dr. Turner on whether there's an underground tunnel coming from Government House, going under Grey Cliff, going under the Baker's building down on Bay Street, and running all the way back to the fort. Either debunk that one time or show them. See the tunnel right there. It's right there. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Mr. Cornish, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay, have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.